interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, August 19 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to block, tackle, and maybe even kick a little bit on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. 2 hours and 35 minutes of great sports talk, and it's a great time of year. Some great guests as well. Before we're out of here at 6:35, we'll send you to Minute Maid Park at that juncture. Stros off the schneid yesterday, breaking a 5-game skid. We will get to the Houston Astros later, but we are almost full tilt onto football right now. And let's lead off, as we like to this time of year, with some scrimmage reaction. I'll try to go split screen, some LSU, some UL, some Saints too. And your phone calls when you're ready. 706-0111. As for LSU, Burrow's back, and the passing game is on track. But if you look at the stats given, and I don't think these are quite as fabricated as the ones that Les Miles used to distribute, just my 2 cents, it actually looks like Miles Brennan had a big volume day with the second team. But Burrow certainly was efficient. LSU's offense starting to click a little better, as you would expect, with their main guy under center. And this was something that you almost could have scripted, right? Burrow was out in the first scrimmage. The defense dominated. Now, those guys are going to be pretty good against a lot of people, but they utterly dominated about 8 or 9 days ago, especially with getting behind the line of scrimmage to the quarterback. I believe 5 sacks in the scrimmage, not this past Saturday, but the first one the week prior. This week, with Burrow back, by all accounts, the ball gets out quicker, the receiver's engaged, and it's the running game that maybe is going to take a little bit longer to catch up. Not necessarily because, well, the O-line wasn't up to snuff, but really because of injuries. This was a scrimmage in which John Emery got his most significant run yet, a scrimmage that left at least one defensive teammate saying he reminds him of Shady McCoy, just so shifty. It was a scrimmage where Ty Davis-Price got a lot of run as well, but the yards per weren't exactly spectacular. So the freshmen got a lot of run because, well, some of the veterans, they were resting and a little dinged up. Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't go in LSU scrimmage on Saturday. All of this feeds into a pattern, right? When their guys aren't 100% and they don't have a ton to prove because they've been on campus 2, 3, some of them even 4 years, they're not going to force it. And I think that's exactly the right way to handle things. And so the passing game, according to Ed Ogeron, right where LSU wants it to be, progressing nicely. The running game will depend on running backs getting healthier. What I get more interested in, I know this is scrimmage reaction, but I like when you get to talk to the guys Monday midday. What does that mean? Okay, one, you're not getting the players right after the game slash scrimmage. They've had a little time to chew on it. They've almost certainly watched the film, discussed it in their room, and then it's been discussed above them by the coaches as part of an all-around team scheme. One of the things that I noticed today, credit to James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine, some of the veteran wideouts, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, both of them said today that freshman wide receiver Devontae Lee will be a red zone threat this season. The exact quote, he is jumping over DBs to catch balls every day, period. Every single day. Another period. I think we all recognize that LSU's got some room for a slot receiver to come in as a freshman, do some damage, earn playing time. And we keep talking, rightfully so, about the now-healthy Trey Palmer. Let us not forget about Devontae Lee. This is another one of the type of cats that Alabama badly wanted. This was a recruiting win for LSU, going to a meet to get this young man. So it'll be exciting to see just what he might be able to turn into on the field. And what else does Devontae Lee excelling mean? It means a boot in the backside for some of your elder statesmen at wide receiver. Maybe it pushes Terrace Marshall a little bit. More than that, maybe pushes Racy McMath, who had some good numbers in that scrimmage over the weekend. So you're looking at the offense. You want to know how it went with Burrow back under the helm. Looks like it went a lot better. Ogeron and company feel awfully pleased with it. All right, we'll scoot over to this side of the basin and the Raging Cajuns. The first unit offense and defense looked very good. Afterwards, maybe more head-scratching and question marks. It just speaks to an issue of depth. And nowhere are they dealing with that more for the Raging Cajuns than at tight end. Chase Rogers, hate to do this, right? Go back to the old Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy movie, Life. Like the character can't get right, and he can't. Dude had foot problems in high school in Mississippi. That's what plagued him as a four-star. I think that's why some of the interest maybe from Ole Miss started to cool. Hudspeth and company got him here. Big coup. This guy was catching passes, a four-star tight end from St. Stanislaus, catching them from Miles Brennan. He got here, injured himself, took a redshirt year, and now it happened again. But here's the problem. His injury might be the most significant. It's not the only one at that position. Johnny Lumpkin also dealing with a couple of bumps and bruises. So too is former STM Cougar Hunter Bergeron. And so they're dealing with some frontline depth, some frontline and some depth injury issues, but all across the board, they're having some depth issues with guys stepping forward, right? Or maybe they just haven't been consistent enough. Identify yourself as that second man up or that guy who's ready to step in for some platoon action. Plus, a little bit like LSU in the first scrimmage, the Cajuns in Saturday's second scrimmage allowed too many sacks. And so while Levi Lewis might be proving that not only is he the guy, but he's a drop-back quarterback who can stay in the pocket, you can't stay too long. We'll finish the split screen open here for today's program with the Saints, and that's the one of the three that we all got to watch yesterday. Unless you have DirecTV in the area, then it's probably a bit of a sore subject. Call your provider. Don't yell at B2BS. And try not to yell at Teddy Bridgewater, but I think your instincts are going to tell you that you should. Taysom Hill, as Clint mentioned in the two-minute drill, fantastic, showing that he can do maybe some more things, add to his plate at quarterback, things that weren't there last year, especially when he can throw it. But for everything he did well to start the game, I don't think Teddy Bridgewater did a whole lot that got people inspired about, okay, what happens right away if Breeze gets injured? Forget about who the quarterback of the future is. What happens in 2019? According to yesterday, it might be ugly.
It was definitely not exactly the best performance for Teddy Bridgewater. Yes, he was under the weather, but that still doesn't mean a thing to me. It's all about seeing what Bridgewater, after last week, he looked really good in that first half. I felt like if he was able to put it together against the Los Angeles Chargers, I think I'd have a lot more confidence in him if, of course, Drew Brees were to, knock on wood, hopefully this doesn't happen, but he winds up on the bench due to an injury. Again, it's one of those things you just hope doesn't happen, but if it happens, Teddy Bridgewater didn't give exactly a vote of confidence to anybody, including myself.
There's a lot more that we will get to when it comes to the New Orleans Saints, especially on the other side of this opening break. So let me give you a rundown of who we got coming aboard. And then I do want to carve out a second, if I may, at the end of this segment for something that's a little more important than sports. And yes, that is possible. It does exist. Great guest list today. Ed Daniels coming aboard in about 4 minutes. We're going to speak with the director of WGNO Sports in New Orleans. So we're talking Saints directly on the other side. At 5:15, Ruffin Rodri, owner of Rufino's on the River, talking LSU scrimmage. At 5:30, Jim Inkster, president of Tiger Rag Magazine. We're bringing him back aboard to B2BS to discuss the impact that former governor, Kathleen Blanco had on sports in this state. And I'll get back to Governor Blanco momentarily. But Jim Inkster coming aboard at 5:30. And then J.P. Kelly, he is the Louisiana Select Association CEO. We're going to talk split and our things coming back together at 6:15. But allow me, if you don't mind, to end our opening segment by paying respects to the 54th governor of our state of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, born in New Iberia, passed away yesterday at the age of 74, right here in Lafayette, Louisiana. did so much for the state. Elected governor in November of 2003 and held the wheel during some of the most turbulent times that our state has known when it comes to the upheaval of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita and just so, so much. And so we do want to wish the condolences and send our best to the family of Governor Blanco. And again, we're going to remember her, especially with Jim Inkster at 5:30. We'll be right back in. Ed Daniels, when we return, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, we opened up plenty of LSU and Cajuns, just a little on the Saints. We're going to change that quotient right now. Aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, the sports director for ABC 26 WGNO out of New Orleans, it is Ed Daniels. Ed, great to have you back. How are you?
Ben, what's up, buddy?
I thought that defense looked better yesterday out on the West Coast. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to really, I don't know, man. You know, these games, it's mix and match, you know, different personnel in at different times. You know, a lot of guys not playing, Cam Jordan out. You know, the Saints started four of their top five guys on the offensive line, except for their left tackle. I don't know, it's just, you know, Ben, it's just really hard to get a read on these preseason games. And I really would not put a lot of stock in them unless you were winning 52-0 or losing 52-0. I simply would not put a lot of stock in these games.
So if you don't read a lot into overall performance, and I certainly get that, individually, anybody on the defensive side that caught your eye?
Well, I mean, a guy that the Saints have liked is Caden Ellis, the seventh-round pick middle linebacker. I thought he did a good job yesterday, you know. I think the Saints have had a good draft. I think Hampton and Gardner Johnson, both of the defensive backs, can help him. I've always been a big fan of Eric McCoy, and after seeing him in pads and practice, I just thought he was going to be a terrific player, and I think he's going to be. And who else am I forgetting there? There's one other draft pick that I think is going to be a good player. So, you know, the guy that I think is in jeopardy, maybe a practice squad guy, is Alize Mack. But I think the rest of their draft has been really good.
Talking Saints football with Ed Daniels of WGNO Sports. Alarming the way that Teddy Bridgewater played, or just, again, preseason, these things
well,
happen?
Well, you know, look, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater did not play well yesterday. I thought he played a lot better than Taysom Hill in the first game against, you know, more of the starters in there against the Vikings. So, you know, look, Teddy Bridgewater was signed to be the backup quarterback here. And I think it's going to be a situation where Taysom Hill is going to again be doing all the things that he usually does as the Saints kind of jack of all trades. But if you ask me, at least in practice, in the practices that I've seen, you know, who was the more accurate passer, I would say it was Teddy Bridgewater. And that's the thing about Taysom Hill to me, is he going to be able to drop back and be an accurate thrower? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if we'll find that answer out here, because I think he's going to continue to still be in this this role he's with the Saints, where he's kind of a guy who does everything from returning kicks to, you know, playing running back, wide receiver, quarterback in a pinch, all the things that he's done and done them quite well. And I still think that Teddy Bridgewater is your number two guy. You know, and one other thing about yesterday. In the second half, what was happening with Taysom Hill? Who was he playing against?
Yep.
And look, you know, people don't know this maybe because they don't see the Chargers a lot on defense, but the Chargers have an excellent defense. And their defense in the first half, the starters, for the most part, were on the field and doing a really good job. So I think there's a kind of a confluence of things going on here. But you know how it is. A guy has a great second half, and everybody's going, well, wow, he should be our backup quarterback. And I personally do not believe that.
Ed, I'm always kind of looking at this Saints roster, especially the offense, and wondering what life after Mark Ingram looks like. And certainly Kamara's a stud, but I think he was complimented, obviously, by what 22 brought. How do you feel about the guys after Kamara right now?
Well, you know what? I like Latavius Murray. I really do. I think he's going to be a good – I think he fits the same scheme. He's one cut and get up the field. And I think he's going to do a really good job. Because here's the deal, Ben. If the Saints' offensive line is healthy, all right, Larry Warford, who is a good player, is their fifth-best player on the offensive line. You know, Ramczyk is exceptional. Teron Armstead is right up there with him. They're very good at tackle. Pete is a quality left guard, and I think McCoy is going to be a very, very good rookie in this league, a very good player for a long time. So if Larry Warford is your fifth-best guy, all right, in my opinion, and you've got Nick Easton as kind of a swing guy, if that's the case, I think you've got a pretty good offensive line. And I think Kamara and Murray are both going to make a lot of yards behind that offensive line. And, again, that's what makes preseason such a mirage. You really don't see those full complement of players the entire time. And look, here's all you need to know about preseason. Drew Brees hasn't thrown a pass. I mean, seriously. And everybody's going to make a big deal out of these games. It's kind of like, remember the last game of the regular season last year? The Saints looked terrible against Carolina. Remember that?
I do. Teddy Bridgewater.
And Sean Payton, I asked him about it in the locker room, and he would not dismiss this performance, saying, you know what? You know, we can't just discount what happened today. Or basically what he was saying was sweep it under the rug. But you know what? By the time they had left the locker room and in their cars, they were already sweeping it under the rug and they were heading to Philadelphia. And they won that first playoff game in the Dome against the Eagles. And, of course, we all know what happened against the Rams. So, again, to me, the number one priority in preseason is don't get anyone important hurt. And if that happens, then and you get a few little injuries maybe to other guys and some backups, that's not a great thing. But, you know, when you've got your core intact going to the regular season, that's all you can really ask for.
He's right. And he is Ed Daniels, WGNO Sports in New Orleans. One more for you, Ed. When Kobe Fleener came in, I think a lot of people said, yeah, this is going to work. He was good with Andrew Luck. He'll be great with Breeze. Didn't happen.
Right.
You feel different
right.
about Jared Cook?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jared Cook has more of a track record. And here's the thing about Jared Cook, Ben, that I think that people need to understand. And look, I had to do some research on it myself. Jared Cook, throughout his career, has not been on good offenses. He really hasn't.
Yeah.
If you go back to Titans, the Raiders, very seldom has he been on an offense. I'll have the numbers somewhere written down. But very seldom in his career was he in a top 10 offense, and the Saints have consistently been top 5 or better. And I think he's going to benefit from that. And the same thing for Murray. But you know what? You're not going to find out about it in these preseason games, because whatever the Saints have cooked up, they are certainly not going to show it in these games that do not count.
Ed, you know we appreciate the time. You're a busy man. Look forward to catching up again down the road.
Talk to you soon.
There you have it. One of the real deans over there. There are a couple in New Orleans, but always much love here for Ed Daniels. Clint, not a fan of the preseason there. Says don't take a whole lot away from it. I tend to agree with that. I think that more cases are made, especially for a roster that's as loaded as the Saints. More cases are made for guys trying to get into the back end of the 53 than pushing their way into the starting lineup. I agree with him there. But, yeah, by and large, probably not tons to take away from the preseason.
Exactly, and I have to agree with a lot of what Ed said at the beginning there. I think it's the fact like you just have all these guys who are put in specific spots, just mix and match, as opposed to, you know, you have your solid guys as your starting 22 on both sides of the football. We're seeing it be a lot more mix and match, and mind you, I think that could wind up changing next week, especially with a couple of the injuries to the offensive line. Like Michael Ola, I know, is one of the big ones, but he wound up kind of walking off of his own power, so hopefully he'll be back for Saturday when they take on the Jets.
And that's usually your big one, right?
I mean,
traditionally at least, the third preseason game, I would expect we see a little bit of Drewby. I mean, that's the one where you put your best foot forward, at least for the healthy guys, immediately. And and then you get them out of there after they've done
yep.
what you want. So you're right. Let's see what happens as you progress toward preseason week three. Here's what I'll say. I'll leave you with this thought, and it is a very intentional segue into our sink or swim question, which is coming at you in a hot second. I'm not ready to bury Teddy Bridgewater based off what happened in a week two preseason game. Uh-uh. I'm also not willing, as Denny Green would say, to crown his ass when it comes to Taysom Hill. But what I will take away is that if you have to key on Taysom Hill running from the quarterback position, and clearly you do, he's going to have opportunities this year. I hope that's part of what's added to his plate a little bit more and more as they get into the regular season. And then closer to the postseason, I hope there are some opportunities. I don't know if it's necessarily the RPO. We try to just fit everything into that neat little phrase now. But if he has the opportunity, just based off being a run threat, to pop somebody over the top, even Kamara, somebody out of the backfield, Katie bar the door. That could be a really nice addition to this Saints offense. But we'll talk Saints QBs on the other side of this break. Don't forget, Ruffin Rodriguez talking LSU at 5:15. Jim Inkster on former Governor Kathleen Blanco at 5:30. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
More Saints talk coming at you, but quickly, an interesting college football update, especially in the SEC. Call when you're ready. Would love for your thoughts here. Penny, for your thoughts on this. 706-0111. The new AP Top 25 came out. LSU at 6, for what it's worth. Bama's on the schedule, obviously, this year and every year. And they are at 2nd. Florida is at 8. And LSU's week 2 opponent, Texas, is 10. Kudos here. Heck of a stat from Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. Of the 8 teams in the AP poll, 7 of them have a starting quarterback who plays or played in the SEC. Bama, we know, at number 2 has Tua Tagovailoa. Georgia at 3 has Jake Fromm. Oklahoma at 4, they just announced it today. Jalen Hurts, formerly at Alabama, is the starter. Ohio State at number 5 has Justin Fields, who started at Georgia. LSU at 6 has Joe Burrow. Michigan at number 7 has Shea Patterson. And Florida at 8 has Felipe Franks. So those are seriously, 7 of the top 8 teams, quarterbacks that play or played in the SEC. That's a good one from Connor. But I might take that a step further. I would look at a list like that and notice Jalen Hurts transferred, Justin Fields transferred, Joe Burrow transferred, and Shea Patterson transferred. So Connor O'Gara, I will take your stat. 7 of the AP's top 8 teams have quarterbacks that are or used to be from the SEC. How about 4 of the 8 transferred? You think college football hasn't slipped into a free agency period? You might have got lost in the transfer portal. All right, let's move it along a little bit. And it's time for the question that always comes right after the music.
Love. Exciting and new.
CD, you're laughing. You know I get fired up about college football. We had this earmarked for a damn NFL segment and the Saints, but I saw that and I had to riff a little bit. Everyone is transferring, and the SEC suddenly has some interesting quarterbacks. But we'll segue forward. Your sink or swim question of the day, is the Saints QB of the future currently on the roster? That leaves you with only two options. Is Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill the QB of the future for the Saints? 706-0111. Clint, I'm going to let you lead off, but I'm going to provide a word of warning. I think Ed Daniels is right. Can't react too much to one preseason game.
You can't react too much to a preseason game, but at the same time, Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill are two very different quarterbacks, and I feel like, you know, when we talk about the quarterback of the future, I feel like you're definitely putting a lot of emphasis on that because it's going to be not too distant future, probably the next couple of years, or we see Drew Brees right off into the sunset, and what's the decision that's going to be made? Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater, it was just a one-year deal that he signed. I think that definitely will play a lot into it. But right now, I am saying no, I don't think that the Saints quarterback of the future is currently on the roster. They're going to have to find it either in the draft, which seems easier said than done based off of how everything is for this season, because 2020 seems like the year to kind of get one.
The answer for me is no, I am going to sink. You and I invented years ago in this program, the sink or the swim with caution. I don't know if this is that, but I'm sinking with the caveat, right? So maybe you would say I'm sinking with a chance of survival.
This is a new level.
Yeah, it is. I get excited about football, so I make stuff up. All right, sinking with a chance of survival. The full-time, every-down quarterback of the future is not on the roster right now. But Taysom Hill can be a worthy change-up to whoever the next starter is for a long time to come. And so, no, your every-down quarterback is not on the roster. But I really, really like the upside of Taysom Hill as somebody who the league isn't necessarily going to be able to key in on defensively on a down-in, down-out situation, especially because he can technically line up all over the field. I know when you see him back there in the shotgun, you understand he's at quarterback. But even still, the versatility with him and Kamara, who I also expect to be in the fold in the huddle for a long, long time, I think Taysom Hill is about to start bopping some people over the head with some play-action type of passing. I think that's the next step in the evolution, and we saw it sparingly in 2018. I think a little bit more gets added onto his plate, as I said in the last segment, in 2019. So I don't have a ton of faith that Teddy Bridgewater is that guy. And let's also define some other terms here. How long does Drew Brees have left? I think, counting this season, Clint, it's between 1 and 3 seasons. I think that is the leash on Brees, how long he'll want to do it. Maybe not necessarily how long he can do it. Those might be two different things. They win a championship this year, why would he come back? And so again, 1 to 3 years. If he hangs it up after this season and they win a championship, certainly Teddy Bridgewater is going to get the first crack. It'll also depend on what they can do, their wherewithal, in free agency. Which, by the way, I don't expect that to be voluminous. I don't expect, having just broken off Michael Thomas, knowing that Kamara and Ramchek and Lattimore, knowing that all these guys are going to be up. I mean, before you know it, we're going to be having legitimate conversations about re-upping Marcus Davenport. Feels like he was drafted about 55 seconds ago. It happens quickly in the league. But I've been making the point for a while. I believe the Saints' pay structure is going to change completely once Brees is gone. And there will be a little bit more of a wealth distribution to those star players I just mentioned. And the quarterback, by necessity, isn't going to be able to be a high-dollar guy. Now, from that angle, sure, an aging Teddy Bridgewater fits the bill. But I'm betting they're going to have to go out and find somebody. One thing I do know, if Brees plays 2 or 3 more seasons, it ain't going to be Bridgewater. Why would he stick around that long? If Brees hangs the cleats up after this 2019 campaign, the chances increase that he'll be the best option on the roster, and then maybe he'll get the first crack at it. But my gut tells me that the answer to this is sink. I don't believe the Saints QB of the future is currently on the roster, but I do believe a part-time QB and potentially a part-time extraordinaire QB is on the roster right now in Taysom Hill. He's become my favorite football player, I think, outside of Kamara on this team, Clint. I'm serious. And yesterday's performance maybe helped to further it a tad, but it's not a preseason thing. It's because, as I've told you, he's like a new school Jim Thorpe. He's just the best overall football player on this team. I got a little bit of feedback and people kicking back at that statement when I made it last year during the year. But am I wrong? I mean, they'll put the guy on coverage teams where he can go tackle people and annihilate them. He can return kicks. He can run. He can throw passes. He can catch passes. I don't know. He might be the best blocking tight end on the team this year, understanding that Jared Cook is more of a pass catcher. The guy's kind of sort of a weapon in a lot of ways, Clint. So I think he sticks moving forward, but not every down.
Exactly. He's going to be used more like sparingly as opposed to me. And I think he'll be used a lot more sparingly once Drew Brees kind of hangs it up, because I think they'll wind up using him. They'll wind up using him a lot more on the offensive side of the football, not as much on the special teams, kick returns, all those kind of things. I think we see him a lot more on the offensive side as an occasional quarterback. And like you said, maybe every now and again play that tight end role to kind of block in the jumbo.
And that's part of the reason, right? They went and got the cat, can't remember his name right now, from the Vikings this past offseason. It's like one of the 14 Vikings they have on the roster
now. They have so many of them, it's hard to keep
track. The one that's going to be returning punts and kicks this year. You'll look it up. You'll figure it out. We'll live to fight another day in the show. But that's part of it, right? You don't want Alvin Kamara in a Mark Ingram-less world to be returning punts. You don't want number 7 back there if you can help it. Those are pretty important guys on the team. And so now they have somebody returning punts and kicks who can shoulder that load. All right, think on it and call us in the next segment. I'd love to get some reaction. We got a little on social media. I'll share the Facebook response, and we'll take yours as well over the air. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home on a Monday on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Which one of us is the one that's famous in Cajun country? I hear that every time, and I don't know. You might be the one with the great pipes. Probably not. All right, let's get back to a couple of very important matters. One, our sink or swim question of the day is the Saints QB of the future currently on the roster. Let's give Theo F. some love from Facebook. No, I believe Bridgewater will be gone by the time Breeze retires, but the Saints do need to figure it out soon, very soon. I don't know that I see it in quite as dire of a fashion, but I agree with every other line and word in there from Theo. I'm not sure that the QB of the future is there either. I just got done telling you why I think so. But there's a big part to be played moving forward for Taysom Hill. I'm just not sure how urgent it can be. Because as I've told you before, let's be frank, there are only two ways that you can go out and get a quarterback. One is free agency, the other is free agency slash trade, and the other is in the draft. The Saints are as good of a team as there is in the NFL, in my opinion, right now. They're going to draft most likely between, 28 and 32. I don't know you're getting the quarterback of the future there. I don't know that you should mortgage the future to trade up and get somebody else either in the top five picks. So that's the reason I'm not sure how dire it is right now because, well, you may not be making this move until the offseason after Breeze leaves. I'm not sure that you could do anything about it right now. All right, Clint, I will take a break in this Saints talk because something on the Twittersphere just smacked us in the face like a 2x4. And I have been going back and forth between Kalyvon Chaisson and Kalyvon Chaisson for the better part of 2.5 years on this program. And finally, a native son of the Acadiana area. Maybe he'll come back one day so we can call him the prodigal son. Jacques Doucette, WAFB-TV in Baton Rouge. He put a microphone in front of this man's face just 3 hours ago and asked LSU's stud outside linebacker this very question. Kalyvon, I'm waiting. Teach me.
So some lighthearted stuff to start you out. Mm. Now, we're from Louisiana. When I see your name, I want to call you Chaisson.
Right, right.
That is not correct.
I mean, I can't tell Louisianans how to say a Louisiana name. So that's like, but I, from where I'm from, in my hometown in Houston, we say Chaisson. That's how my mother taught me how to say my name. But it's from this area. Obviously, I have people from New Iberia. My grandmother's my mother. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, actually. So that's how they say it down here. So we just say it that way from where I'm from.
We should just think you're going to chase quarterbacks, right?
Chase. There we go. There's it.
Nobody better than JD. I love it at the end there. My boy, almost Michael Scott style from The Office, came up with the mnemonic device there. You're just going to chase on quarterbacks. You are Kalyvon Chaisson.
That's awesome.
I don't know what's better there. The Michael Scott routine there at the end. Yeah, I've been watching some reruns of The Office lately, so it's on the brain. Get over it. Or is it the original answer from Kalyvon, which is dynamite, by the way? I can't tell Louisianans how to say a Louisiana name. That guy could run for office one day.
Oh, it's awesome. I absolutely love the fact that he said that. It's meanwhile, in between all of that, we have Michael Jacquet telling us his change, how he changes his name heading into senior season.
He made that one up. I'm convinced as time goes on that that's a troll job right there.
I'm almost certain that's a troll job.
Michael Jacquet has been hanging out in the basement with the rules of football dude. And they said, you know what, how can we really just screw with everybody? And so he emerged from that basement as Michael Jacquet. And here we are today toward the end of August and all just utterly confused. I'll add one more to all that. Just because it's related and it's funny. I've been going back and forth, having some conversations with our guy. He comes on the program a lot. Huge fan of what he does for high school sports. And, you know, I mentioned that Ed Daniels is one of the godfathers, the Dons over in New Orleans. This guy is too. And he left me a voicemail the other day, and it started off by saying, Ben, this is Ken Trahan, or from where you are right now, Ken Trahan.
That's awesome.
I didn't know. Look, obviously it's a voicemail, right? It wasn't like a hologram. I couldn't see him saying this, but like I could hear the deadpan, if that makes sense. I could just hear it. So he just hit me with that right off the bat in the VM. So I appreciated that greatly from Ken Trahan. He respects the area and respects the pronunciation. I mean, I feel like it was the other day, tying this all together, where I was calling a Karen Crow basketball game, and it was Braylon Chasson. Yeah. Now I got to talk about Kalevon Chasson. So I've been waffling back and forth on that name for quite some time.
Most of us have.
But the good news is this. I'll land the plane. Kalevon is back in practice. And one of the things that Ed Orgeron said earlier today, Chasson/Chasson, Fulton, I mean, just about everybody you can ask for on LSU's defense is back feeling good, and the plan is for them to all rep with the ones this week. So, again, it's a ramp-up process. They've been going through it. They got back out there, working out, and now it looks like this LSU team, as healthy as they've been maybe so far. And I'll add to that, within the last 40 minutes, let me give the credit here, James Moran, Tiger Egg Magazine, Apu Aika back at practice today, given some more depth along with Tyler Shelvin in the middle of that D-line. Aika missed the last couple of days, and according to James Moran, well, now he's making me be an assumer and make a you-know-what out of me. Christian Fulton apparently was not at practice today. So, good. The word from Ed Orgeron on Saturday, he'll be back out there. We're ramping everyone up. Fulton absent today, but according to Moran, Grant Delpit and then Kalevon back out there as well. It is a no-pads practice. Chasen Hines back out at offensive guard, while Damian Lewis remains out. So we continue to give updates as often as we can. But LSU slowly and surely, not but surely, slowly and surely, is getting exactly where it wants to be from a health standpoint. CD, I know that when I mentioned the Saints thing earlier, I got back to our sink or swim question. I gave you the answer that Theo provided on Facebook. No, the quarterback of the future is not there, and they need to do something about it soon, very soon. How do you feel about that part? I gave my two cents that I just don't know that you can. Like, in other words, how are the Jags supposed to know that they can go out and get Nick Foles after he won a Super Bowl two seasons ago? They couldn't.
Exactly.
They had to roll out with Bortles service. That was horrible last year. Now they know, after this past offseason, that he's available, and they snatched him up. I feel like the Saints might find themselves in a similar spot.
And that's where I'm at as well. I think you need to kind of just figure out what's going to be happening. I mean, it's the same kind of situation. You know, it's definitely apples to apples, apples to oranges here. What do you think about it, Ben? You know, nobody knew we were going to wind up getting Drew Brees after the whole Jim Haslett gets fired, Aaron Brooks gets shown the doors shortly thereafter. So I'm sure they weren't planning for the future after Aaron Brooks. I mean, they were trying to figure out something, but luckily Drew Brees was right there and ready to be taken and wound up the rest of history.
Well, I think really and truly at that point, you just have to give all the credit to Nick Saban.
Yes, of course.
I mean, seriously, this is not a joke nor a drill.
This is a discussion we could have for like years to come about Nick Saban and how he may have single-handedly ruined college football and saved the Saints franchise at the same time.
The gifts that he gave the New Orleans Saints, not necessarily LSU football post
headaches.
Late December 2004. Right? Let's not forget, prior to that, there was some good contributed over about a 4.5 to 5 year run.
Yep.
A lot of good contributed. In fact, I had that conversation not long ago with Ruffin Rodriguez when he was over at his restaurant here in Lafayette doing radio with me. The lunacy, people said, when Mark Emmert decided to pay Nick Saban $1.2 million a year, hired him from Michigan State and paid him. That's too much money for a college football coach. Yeah, there's been some inflation over the last 17, 18 years. Just a touch. All right, CD, we're almost done with 1 hour. Let's finish it in style with one final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Third, I think it's important. We mentioned earlier LSU is ranked 6th in the AP preseason poll, but that makes them the third best team in the SEC. Bama's ranked 2nd, Georgia's ranked 3rd, and just ahead of Florida is LSU. Why is that important? It is entirely possible that two teams from a conference can get into the college football playoff. In fact, it's most highly possible in the SEC. If you don't make it to Atlanta, we know that's the goal. The most important thing you could do is be an 11-1 team, maybe just maybe 10-2, and be sitting there waiting for one of the big dogs in Atlanta to lose. It's all about where you finish, but this ain't a bad place to start. Third in the SEC, and third, the final word of this hour brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back. More Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Louisiana Army National Guard. Aired by the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Green light. Hey girl, school zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ballin' street? Girlin' street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Imagine a job, no, a career where your opinion mattered.
Yeah, can I have your help with this?
Your opinion about.
And the harder you worked, the more money you could make. What if you could become an expert on traditional media?
Digital media.
Social media. If you don't like where you're working now, then why aren't you working here? We have an entire group of radio and television stations, and we're looking for account executives to work with our clients, helping them develop new ideas. You could be their go-to marketing person. A person that everyone relies on.
Yeah, can I have your help with this?
Can you help me with this?
Imagine having a job where every day at work is different. Imagine having a say in your destiny, your career, your income. Want to find out more? Visit DeltaMediaCorp.com. That's DeltaMediaCorp.com and click job openings. Or call Shanae at 337-886-4669. That's 337-886-4669. Delta Media Corporation is an equal opportunity employer.
Time for your sports update. This is the 103.7 The Game 2-Minute Drill.
What's the news?
The Houston Astros finally got off the schneid on Sunday with a 4-1 win over the Oakland A's to avoid getting swept over the weekend. The Astros now return to the friendly confines of Minute Maid Park for a 3-game series against the Detroit Tigers with first pitch set for 7:10. And you'll hear all the action right here on 103.7 The Game, starting with Astro Launch at 6:35. Wade Miley, 11-4 with a 3.11 ERA, will get the start for Houston, while the Tigers are sending out Edwin Jackson, 3-5 with an 8.62 ERA. New Orleans Saints rally back late in Sunday's game against the Los Angeles Chargers, thanks in large part to Taysom Hill, but head coach Sean Payton said there's still a lot of work to do before the regular season begins.
It was obviously two different halves. A lot of things that were frustrating, discouraging, things that we're going to have to clean up when we watch the tape tomorrow. And then some things that were more encouraging in the second half. So by no means is it a game you come away from and feel like, man, you're ready for the regular season to start. We've got a lot of work still to do. So I thought we played pretty good defense early in the game. I thought offensively we were awful.
The LSU Tigers finished their second scrimmage on Saturday, and one thing head coach Ed Ogeron talked about was how the offense looked to be a little more on point with Joe Burrow back with the team.
A lot of great things went on. Preparation all week. Having Joe back, offense looked really good. Now, the offense came out and really, really moved the ball on the first defense. And in the second half, the defense stopped the offense pretty well. And we ended up with a two-minute drive. Joe scored with a two-minute drive and then went into overtime. Both teams kicked the field goal. And lightning was coming, so we had to stop it then.
For Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, I'm Clint Doming. And if you want more news, opinion, and on-demand audio, all you got to do is check out 103.7thegame.com.
Hey, this is Seamus.
I'm Cesaro.
And you're listening to 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports for the next hour and 35 minutes on 103.7 The Game. As always, we are live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We got some great guests coming up in hour two. Ruffin Rodrigue in just about 10 or 11 minutes. Jim Inkster at 5:30, half past the hour. And this will be an important one. Former Governor Kathleen Blanco announced over the weekend, passed away at the age of 76. Her impact on our fair state, in particular in the world of sports. And I want to get into a lot of that with Jim Inkster. Looking forward to it at 5:30. But we'll take your phone calls right now. 706-0111. We've done a lot of scrimmage reaction, preseason exhibition game reaction, 1 hour in. I want to begin this hour with the AP preseason poll. Ed Orgeron and the LSU Tigers, sixth. Not bad. And I ended hour number one by saying, it's not a bad spot at all to be. Esteemed as one of the top three teams in the Southeastern Conference. Always more important where you end as opposed to where you start. But it's good for LSU, I think, to be perceived as one of the upper crust. Because as we know, if you start that high, it's not that difficult to have to climb back up that high. There are instances in the past, even the recent past, where teams have been able to buck that trend. But by and large, I mean, it's not an accident, is it? That Oklahoma from the Big 12, Ohio State from the Big 10 are usually first in line to get to the college football playoff. Well, they start there. Yeah, they're pretty darn good teams, but they start there. That part helps. And so your top 10, it's Clemson, Bama, Georgia. 1, 2, 3. And I think in this college football playoff era, especially these last 2 or 3 years, that has been pretty solidified, that it's those three and then everybody else is trying to catch up a little bit. Oklahoma's 4. Ohio State is 5. It's also not an accident that I just mentioned those two as conference frontrunners a moment ago in their respective conferences. And then there's LSU, as I mentioned, at 6. Michigan at 7. Throw a star by that one because I'm coming back. Florida, Felipe Franks and second-year head coach Dan Mullen are at 8. The Gators going to take on Miami. First real college football game of the season this Saturday. Hashtag week zero fever, baby. You better catch it. Notre Dame at number 9. That's basically obligatory. And then Texas, LSU's week 2 opponent, is at number 10. This isn't our sink or swim question. We've already done that. I already asked if you think the Saints QB of the future is currently on the roster. You can call in with that. But I'm opening this segment in this hour with the AP top 10. Is there an imposter in that group? Is there more than one? Call us up. Let us know. 706-0111. Clint, I'm gonna toss mine out there. Probably tip my hand. If this were a game of poker, you would all know I'm bluffing. Who told Michigan they were allowed at the big boy table for this conversation? I don't understand that for the life of me. Michigan has had a difficult time finishing in the top two in its division since Captain Kaki took over in Ann Arbor. Yes, they've got a veteran quarterback in Shea Patterson. I understand that they're starting to recruit a defense that's on par with some of the best from around the country. But I'm not big into giving teams their props that haven't necessarily earned it. I just don't see where Michigan has earned it on a par with some of these others. Notre Dame, I love to pick on when it comes time for December and early January. But I'll give them some credit. They've started seasons very strong. I get the fact that they're getting top 10 love. For that matter, I can understand Texas even. But Michigan, to me, seems to be the imposter in the group.
And I'd have to agree with you, Ben, because the fact, I mean, you looked at the record last year, 8-5, the only team that didn't have double-digit wins last year. And it's just amazing to see that Michigan's still getting a lot of love. I almost feel like going Notre Dame just to go Oppo like Taco, because it just feels like every year it's consistently Notre Dame is in that conversation of being a top 10, top 5 team.
Well, don't you think they were top 10 last year? I would ask you that question.
If I'm not mistaken, I think they were.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
They went, but it feels like every year. In the regular season, right? They went undefeated the regular season. I get that we knocked on their strength of schedule. You may look it up. Tell me if I'm wrong on that. Were they 11-1 or 12-0?
They were 12-1 last year.
Yeah, okay. And they got absolutely waxed by Clemson in the semis, right? So I get bent about putting them into the college football playoff because they're the anti-Bama. Bama has shown, whether we like it here and this part of the country or not, Bama has shown that they kind of have earned the benefit of the doubt. The two times they've gotten into either the BCS national championship game or the college football playoff without winning their division, much less conference, both times they won the whole damn thing. And so they always pass the eyeball test. Notre Dame, for me, shrinks from that moment. They did it with Manti Te'o and his invisible girlfriend in 2012. They did it again last year. Don't necessarily belong at that table and that stage that late in the year. But I'll defend the Irish. They were absolutely a top 10 team last year. Not just on paper, not just the eyeball test, like point of fact, that was a top 7-10 team in the country. They just played the best team in the country in the semis last year and got crushed on a national stage. So I don't know if I agree with Notre Dame is my only point.
Okay, I can get behind that, but again, it's that thing where you just look at that top 10, look at the next level below. Who would you wind up replacing, like hypothetically, of course, who would you wind up replacing Michigan with if we were voting on it right here, right now?
All right, so I'm looking at the way that things laid out. I'm trying to get the whole top 25 here. I had it on Twitter a moment ago. Give me 11 through 15, brother.
11 through 15, Oregon, Texas A&M, Washington, Utah, Penn State.
Boy, Penn State's had some awfully good teams. I know some of their best players have made their way to the NFL since. I'm not in place of Michigan. I could take a couple of those teams.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think Oregon is a team that I wouldn't mind seeing at 9 or 10. Penn State, I just told you, there's a couple of those teams that I wouldn't mind seeing get their chance. Texas A&M is just a tremendously interesting case study.
That's where I'm at. Like,
because I think it's BS to preseason rank somebody based off strength of schedule. That shouldn't have anything to do with it. You shouldn't rank based on the way you think they're going to finish. That's completely contrary to me. I think they've got the toughest schedule in the country. But that wouldn't stop me from telling you that I think they have top 12 or 15 talent. Are they definitely top 10? I'm not so sure about that. All right, quick opener because we got two great back-to-back guests. We got to make room for them. This edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports on a Monday brought to you in large part by Relief Windows. When you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, think Relief Windows and visit the website, reliefwindows.com. B2BS coming right back in with Ruff and Rodrigue on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Back in and absolutely one of our favorite times of the week. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, and waiting for us, Ruff and Rodrigue, owner of Ruffino's on the River. How are you, Ruff?
Oh, doing great, Ben. How are you?
Life is good here, and it seems like things were better for the offense with Joe Burrow back at the helm. Some of the things you've heard offensively about that scrimmage Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to go, and then my kids had some other things planned. These new schools, man, they got all kinds of stuff going on with sports. But, you know, I talked to some guys, and, you know, the thing is, Ben, the game has changed so much that during the preseason and the practices and stuff, they're, you know, so many fans want to know what's going on. And they put in so much, and I know the scrimmage is completely closed, but, you know, when I was at the scrimmage the other day, they were going full, but they still, you could tell it wasn't, you know, they're trying to keep everybody healthy. And, you know, Burrow, from everything I hear from every coach that has seen him and Ryan Clark, my buddy, and all these different people, that his passes are crisper, they're more precise, they're more accurate, which we haven't seen in a while, even with Danny Etling, and you know, since a Mettenberger type that could throw that deep out and all that stuff, and Burrow is showing that he went and gets some guidance somewhere, because he's throwing the ball as good as we've seen at LSU in a while, and he's got those receivers that are that good. He's got some backs out of the backfield that can catch. And, you know, the big thing right now is a makeshift offensive line that everybody knows about that they need to shore up. But for now, Burrow is, you know, he's a guy, man. And it's going to be, hopefully, every year we say this, dynamic offense at LSU, dynamic offense. But I think this year may be the truth.
I know you weren't there Saturday, but you saw him the Saturday prior. You've been around this program. What percentage of the time would you say the offense is in shotgun? You and I talked about this off air. I wanted to bring it on to the air.
The shotgun?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, it's in Burrow. That's what he ran in high school, and he's comfortable with it. And, you know, that's a big deal when you have a guy that's comfortable with something and you're not really comfortable. You know, under center, in the NFL, they need to learn because they need to play in the NFL, but in college, so hardly anybody's under center anymore. And, you know, that's a big thing about the offense. If you run this kind of offense, tackles really aren't – if you're doing a lot of three-step drops and it's quick reads, tackles just need to get the guy's hands down. And the guards and center become the most important guys in the offense because you got to create that pocket. That's kind of like we did with Nacho and Eric Andelsek when I was there with Tommy Hodson, who loved stepping up in the pocket, and we provided it for him. We kept those guys in the line of scrimmage, and you know, he was able to do that. So that's the game today, and with shotgun, you know, and Burrow can run, man. Remember, this guy's tough, and he's got some speed. So this offense is going to be, you know, I'm not going to say it's Oklahoma's offense, but I'm going to say they got as good a talent as Oklahoma, and if they run it right, they can be.
I just seem to remember the last time we sat down at Rufino's on the River, I thought you told me that it seemed like 65-70%+ of the time they were in shotgun, trying to make sure that I was on base with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're seeing. But, I mean, look, come game time, you know, the head coach may say, look, we've seen this with Les, we've seen this with Ed a little bit. Head coach steps in, run the ball. You know, they have that old school mentality, so we got to watch that too. But I think at this time, especially with Brady, he knows that the guy can put some points up, especially with him and Ensminger. And I'm excited to see how much Ed lets them go and lets them roll.
Talking now with Ruffin Roderick, owner of Rufino's on the River, and we talk a lot about the ambiance, but you add in the 3-for-30 lobster menu during August. That place is kicking right now.
Yeah, you know, Ben, I tell you, great weekend again. Did some charity stuff this weekend for the Healing House and raised a bunch of money for some people and really had a good time with it. And, yeah, 3-for-30 is still going strong in August. And looking for that first big game, you know, with UL's in New Orleans, LSU at home and Georgia Southern, and people already make reservations for big Friday nights before football games. So it's going to be fun. But the 3-for-30 Lobster Fest is going fantastic. And, you know, with the economy rising, the oil and gas doing well, I was just in New Orleans with two guys from Lafayette who got big awards for our business group and both oil and gas guys. And, you know, everybody's positive about the community and the economy. So lot to look forward to in Lafayette in the next few years.
I'm going to run down the AP preseason top 10 that just came out, especially the SEC teams on it. I'll get your reaction. Clemson's 1, no surprise. Bama, Georgia, 2-3. I'll skip down. LSU is at 6, Ruffin. Florida's at 8, and Texas is at 10. Anything jump off the page to you?
You know, preseason polls are about returning quarterbacks, in my opinion. Unless you're Alabama or Clemson right now, you're just loaded. But, you know, if you have a returning quarterback, you're going to get votes. You know, that's just the way. And Joe Burrow is a returning quarterback. You know, we've seen 13 and 14 the last few years. You know, LSU will finish 13. LSU finished, you know, preseason 14. But we didn't have a returning quarterback. But now that we do, that's what you're seeing. And that's a big thing. You know, Texas has a returning quarterback. You know, Florida has one. That's the bottom line. So that what really sticks out is that returning quarterbacks.
Anything defensively at this time of year for LSU that you're not necessarily concerned about but thinking about? I know they had a lot of defenders that have been out. They keep coming back now. I mean, Fulton, Delpit, everybody that maybe sat out for a bit is back. Anything on that defense jump out at you?
Speed, Delpit's ridiculous. I think he's, you know, I'm not going to say he's Connor Matthew because they're such different sizes and players, but they both have this keen instinct for the football. If Delpit really stays healthy and really stays focused, man, he can be that kind of player. With his speed and size and the way he plays, and he's a ball hawk and can wrestle the ball from guys and create interceptions, he can create mayhem. And that's why he's gotten so many accolades, because he has that in him. And it's fun to watch, I tell you. It's got a great story, too, with Grant, you know, being a Katrina refugee and going to Houston and then wanting to come back home. I mean, what a great story.
Got one more for you, Ruffin. We'll have a little fun here. I always like to talk to defenders that have to go up against the option. Well, LSU, we know, is taking on Georgia Southern. What's it like blocking for that type of attack? Do you get more excited as an O-lineman knowing that that's coming?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fun part. But, you know, a lot of pass sets, a lot of, you know, just moving the football as a lineman. Now, you want to run it, and, you know, when you got two good freshmen and some serious guys coming back, as an offensive lineman, you love to run because, you know, it's you. And you get the key block, and you may have your name set on TV or whatever. It's a fun thing, but well, LSU's going to move the ball and all that. You don't, you know, the good thing about it is you have quick plays like that. You don't have to do a whole lot. You make a little bit of an effort and you have a complete pass and, you know, you save some energy. So that's a good thing too. But this offensive line just needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, saving their legs with a quick passing game, not a bad thing at all. Ruffin, as always, you know, I appreciate the time. Look forward to being back this Friday. Rufino's on the river.
Absolutely, Ben. You have a good day.
CD, I'll end with a couple of things from college football, and I'll get your help on one. But this is pretty good, and it complements something else that we alluded to earlier. Cole Kubelik with the SEC Network. Think about the AP top 10 we keep chattering about today. The number one team in the country's former starter, Clemson's former starter, is now at Missouri. The number two team, that's Alabama, their former starter, well, he's now at the number four team. Oklahoma, and he's their starter. I can go on and on for this. The number six team starter, LSU, played at the number five team, Ohio State. It's crazy. The number seven team, Michigan, their starter was previously at Ole Miss, and it goes on and on and on. There are so many connections. For that matter, Justin Fields, who was at Georgia, number three, is now the starter at Ohio State, number five. We are full out in free agency, brother. From that tidbit to one that I think Sun Belt fans and certainly supporters of UL are going to hear, and this isn't good for anyone, I don't think.
Exactly. This kind of news popped up during the break, and that's about Arkansas State head coach Blake Anderson taking a leave of absence. Obviously, it's been well documented. We've mentioned it on Bumper to Bumper Sports and several different programs across the country. It's been talked about his wife, Wendy, suffering from cancer, and basically Blake Anderson announced he's taking leave of absence to be with his wife and his family, continue to pray for peace for his family and provide any assistance any way we can. And then you have David Duggan, the assistant head coach in D.C., will serve as the interim head coach until Anderson decides to resume his duties as head coach.
Not good news. And we'll send our thoughts and prayers toward Wendy. I saw him and spent some time with Blake Anderson at Sunbelt Conference Media Day. As upbeat and as cordial as you could ask for, wanted to know about you, your family. He doesn't know me from Adam. I interview him one time a year, but he still was that man. And it didn't look like he was having to put on that good front. It's just who he is, but you know he and his family. And that Arkansas State Red Wolves family certainly going through it, and so we'll keep him in our thoughts and our prayers. All right, speaking, unfortunately, of the recently deceased former governor, Kathleen Blanco, passed away over the weekend. To discuss her legacy in Louisiana and a connection to sports in our great state, Jim Inkster, Tiger Ag Magazine, will join us when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in, 33 minutes past 5 o'clock, and I've been excited to bring our next guest on all day long. Let's find him. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, he wears a lot of hats, but he is certainly the owner-president of the Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Rag Magazine. We're going to welcome Jim Inkster back to the program. How are you, Jim?
I'm fine, Ben. It's great to be on the air with the award-winning Ben Love. And congratulations to you and your success, and it's an honor for me to share the microphone with you.
Well, always a privilege to speak with you, and certainly treasure your perspective, especially when it comes to politics in our great state. And we know that sometimes that goes hand in hand with the world of sports. But yesterday, former Governor Kathleen Blanco passed away at the age of 76 here in the Hub City at St. Joseph's Hospice Carpenter House. I'll go big picture, Jim. How will you remember her and the legacy that she leaves behind?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned sports and politics, because I think we often view sports through a political prism for good reason, and we view politics as though it's a horse race. And Kathleen Blanco, in 2003, when she won her race for governor, after having been a state representative and a public service commissioner and lieutenant governor, she was behind Bobby Jindal by more than 180,000 votes in the primary, and then she won by about 55,000 in a runoff. So it was a great come-from-behind victory. I thought she handled herself with great grace and charm, and unfortunately for her, she was connected to Katrina, and that was largely a federal failure, not a state failure, but nonetheless, perception is reality. It happened on her watch, and I don't think she ever recovered from that from a public perspective until now. And it's interesting how after 14 years, time, as the old axiom goes, heals everything, and she will lie in state, which is a great honor that has not been accorded to every governor who has died in Louisiana. And she is treated with reverence, and for good reason. She was Louisiana's first female elected governor, and she never was immersed in any kind of scandal. And even though she represented the state as a whole, I don't think she ever neglected her Acadiana roots. She loved Lafayette, New Iberia, the surrounding area. She was a product of that area, and she never forgot from where she came.
You're absolutely right. A USL grad, Jim, 1964, and married a high school football coach. So I think, again, it's the bleed over from politics to sports and then back again. But I did want to bring you on. I believe she had a pretty important and significant impact when it came to the New Orleans Saints. She pushed for the refurbishing of the damaged Superdome in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. How much do you think that, along obviously with Tom Benson and maybe a change of heart for moving the franchise to San Antonio, how much did that help assure the Saints remained in New Orleans?
Well, just as John McKiffin is not given full credit for being the governor who had the vision to proceed with the Superdome, Kathleen Blanco has not been given the compliment she deserves for saving the Superdome. I recall in the midst of that catastrophe talking with John Barry, the author of Rising Tide, and he said the Superdome was such a place of despair at that time, they might as well tear it down. Well, there was a sentiment to do that, and she went the other direction, and it went from a place of despair to a place of hope. 4 years later, the Saints won their only Super Bowl championship, and it would not have happened without her at the vanguard leading the charge. So she deserves full credit for, quote, saving the Superdome, because without the Superdome, there's no New Orleans Saints. They weren't going to build a new stadium at that time. And as you remember, Tom Benson, he had a flirtation with moving the team to San Antonio. And he was not happy about playing those replacement games in Tiger Stadium, but he did it. And Tiger Stadium did not fill for the Saints, not even for the Saints and the Dolphins, who at that time were coached by Nick Saban. So it had to be the Superdome or else, and Kathleen Blanco is the one that made sure the state had the funding to proceed. And I think all these years later, we're very appreciative that the palace on Poydras Street has been preserved.
We continue our conversation with Jim Inkster, owner and president of the Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Ag Magazine. Don't forget, you can hear Tiger Ag Radio Tuesdays at 6 on our fair station. Jim, you mentioned the Superdome. We just learned from John Bel Edwards, current governor, that there's going to be a lot more money that's pumped in, and they'll continue to, I guess, improve upon that cathedral in New Orleans. Your perspective there and what it means to the state?
Yeah, I think it has to happen if we want to keep the Saints. We pay now Gail Benson gobs of money to keep the Saints, but can you imagine Louisiana and New Orleans without the New Orleans Saints? It has to happen, and this governor, like those before him, has bitten the bullet, and he is proceeding, and those dollars go up and away. The Superdome, at the time it was built and opened in 1975, it was $169 million, and it was considered this huge boondoggle. And think of $169 million today. That won't handle the renovations that they're talking about. And LSU just built a recreation center that opened in the last few years that cost $85 million. So it's an investment that the state was wise to proceed with.
Jim, I always enjoy your columns in Tiger Ag Magazine, statistically speaking, and certainly LSU is at the crux of much of the conversation there. What did you think about Ed Orgeron taking over as the full-time head coach at LSU, and I guess your observations of where he is now and where this program's heading?
Well, he has done a good job. There's no doubt that he was a journeyman coach. He's no kid. He's 58 years old. And his venture at Ole Miss was unsuccessful, 10 wins, 25 losses. Then he was 6-2 as an interim coach at USC and kind of on the skids. And then he gets this weird opportunity and has taken full advantage of it. He's a great recruiter. We mentioned Kathleen Blanco. She took office right after LSU. I mean, like right after, the week after LSU won its first national championship in the 21st century, and then she left office with a title. They won the championship over Ohio State in 2008 as she was walking out the door. But Ed Orgeron is now assigned to get LSU back to where it was under Nick Saban and in the early years of Les Miles, and that's a tough task. You know, he's 0-3 against Alabama. And in the 21st century, only three coaches in the LSU-Alabama series have won games. Dennis Franchione won once with Alabama. Les Miles won 5 times with LSU. And Nick Saban's won 14 times, 4 times with LSU and 10 times with Alabama. And Saban is just the dominant player in that series. And unless Orgeron beats him, I don't think he'll last, but the talent is there for LSU to be competitive with Alabama, and I think Orgeron will have to win once in the next 2 years to proceed against Alabama in order for the fans to be satisfied. I don't think they're going to tolerate it if, you know, a year and a half from now, a year and a few months, he's 0-5 against Nick Saban. So that's the elephant on the schedule, and he's got to win against Alabama or he would get a ticket out of Tiger Town.
It's so interesting to me, Jim, that you say that. And I wonder if every coach at LSU is doomed to kind of fall in the shoes that eventually were occupied by Charlie McClendon and what happened along the other sideline with Bear Bryant. If you can't beat that guy once every however many years it is, three, four, or five, there's just not going to be room for you in Baton Rouge.
Well, yeah, Saban's won eight in a row now since losing the game of the century against Miles and crew 9-6 back in 2011. And he has Alabama in a place very similar to where Bear Bryant had it when Charlotte McClendon was facing Alabama. It's hard to believe, but in the Southeastern Conference, Alabama was even more dominant then than it is now. I think in his 11 years between 1971 and 81, he lost like five conference games with Bear Bryant, so nobody was beating Alabama. And Charlie McClendon went 2-14 against Alabama while he was beating most everybody else, had winning records against any other regular opponent in the conference, including Ole Miss, which at that time was a big rival. But it wasn't enough, and his final battle against the Bear was 3-0 at Tiger Stadium 40 years ago this November, and that Alabama team won a national championship. And Charlie McClendon was close a few times, more than a few, against Bear Bryant. He lost 7-6 in 1967. He lost some close games, and he paid the price with his job. And after his departure 40 years ago, he's still the winningest coach in LSU history with 137 wins. And if it had not been for Bear Bryant, he would have been the dominant coach in the Southeastern Conference during his tenure in Tiger Town.
Finishing up with Jim Engstrom on 103.7 The Game, I was lucky enough to serve under Jim at Tiger Egg Magazine during that game of the century that you've referenced, right? November of 2011. You'll have to help me remember your column following that game. I know it had the phrase agony of defeat in there for the 9-6 game, right?
Yeah, Alabama missed how many field goals? It was a bunch. And Alabama really played a good game. But the Eric Reed interception at the goal line and the fact that they couldn't find a kicker to get the ball through the goalposts enabled LSU to win. And LSU had a great team that year. I mean, a great team, and blew out just about everybody but Alabama, and then got blown out by Alabama on January 9th of 2012. But I bet if you were to ask Saban and Miles, and then remember they had some great teams, their best team, Saban would say the 2011 Alabama team, and Miles would say the 2011 LSU team that did not win the national title. But that was a great ball club, and in that championship game in the Superdome, they really cratered. And Jordan Jefferson was the quarterback. Miles refused to put in anybody else, and they got five first downs and went home a 21-0 loser. You know, Ben, that around that time, LSU was actually thinking of inviting Russell Wilson to join the team, and I think they actually did. I don't know how intent they were, but can you imagine? He had 1 year of eligibility left, and he couldn't play at North Carolina State because he was a professional baseball player. The ACC rules did not allow it, so he had to go to Wisconsin. But can you imagine Russell Wilson on that 2011 LSU team? And it almost happened.
Would have been absolutely scary, and it ended up pretty good for the guys up in Camp Randall, there's no doubt. Jim, it's always special to share the airwaves with you. Thank you for doing this, and I know that it came on the heels of the passing of Governor Blanco, but I think an important message that needed to be shared. Thank you, Jim.
Well, my honor, and congrats again, Ben. You're a good man and a great talent.
He's Jim Engstrom, Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Rag Magazine. Oh, yeah, plenty of editorial meetings with that man over the years, and plenty of long, late days on Sundays, and I'm here to tell you he was there for every bit of it. That's a hard working man right there and a heck of a talent. So our pleasure to have Jim Engstrom on the show. All right, final break of the hour. When we come back, let's get your reaction. We've had some great guests today. Ed Daniels, Ruffin Rodriguez, and Jim Engstrom. Tell us what you thought about it. We'll throw a little shade as well. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back
back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Rounding out hour number two, back in for more. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. We'll still take that first phone call today. I know we have been guest heavy, but we got some time for you now. 706-0111. Only one more guest left on our docket today. Another guy that I spent a lot of time with back in the day in Baton Rouge. J.P. Kelly, he's now the athletic director at Catholic High Baton Rouge, but the purpose of this conversation coming up at 6:15, he's now the CEO of the Louisiana Select Association. They dispatched a press release on Friday. What's that mean going forward? When, and especially where, are the Select football state championship games going to be played? We'll address those questions and see if there's a reconciliation in the future for the Select and non-Select sides. Again, J.P. Kelly coming your way in about 25 minutes. But C.D., I think there are a few things that I would take away from that conversation with Jim Inkster there and at least mention. I wanted to get back to it after the interview. I told him, leading into it, I wanted to talk about her connection with sports. And he brought up some of the things that I expected we'd get to, right? We talked about the Superdome and maybe her importance of helping to keep that monument, that cathedral, where it is. I understand the horrible stigma with that building and that area after Katrina, but I knew we would get to that subject. I had forgotten, and frankly, it's because I was going away to college at the time in Georgia. I had forgotten that she was trailing that drastically in the race against Bobby Jindal. That would have been in the fall of 2003. Yep. She came from behind, won that race. I like the horse racing analogy there from Jim Inkster. And first ever female governor of Louisiana beginning in 2004.
Exactly, and it's just amazing to see how much she kind of had to deal with, and she handled it all with a lot of aplomb, and I absolutely enjoyed the fact of what we heard from Jim Inkster, a lot of stuff that even I kind of, like, it slipped my mind, like some of the names that he brought up when referring to this, like keeping the Superdome in new and not demolishing and all that. Just hearing some of those names, it was like, wait a minute, I forgot about that name involved in this.
No, guy's an almanac. I mean, seriously, Jim Inkster, photogenic memory does not begin to address the full situation there. The guy is a steel trap. So I knew he'd be the man for the job today, and I'm glad that we had him aboard. All right, while we've still got some time, how about your daily reminder? No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and awnings while Todd takes care of the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
The Ohio State University. We have all said it. Whether we're all being serious or facetious is a different matter, but we get the fact they're all really proud of it. You watch all the introductions with the NFL players and the starting lineups, and they all hit the same chord. The Ohio State University. And now, hilariously, Ohio State has filed to trademark the word the. Or maybe the word the. I don't know, but you get it. T-H-E. How in the bleepity bleep do you trademark the? I have absolutely no legal understanding how you can try and express dominion over that word. But it's cracking me up. What's even funnier, and the real shade of the day, late last week when the announcement was made that the Ohio State University was trying to trademark the, Clint, I know you saw this, Michigan's official Twitter account put out a small, like, maize and blue M, right? Their Michigan logo M, and then massively the words or the letters above it, OF. So I guess that's their jab. They're going to be the University of Michigan. Maybe they'll go after of. If they could trademark that, perhaps we can have a battle between Michigan State and Ohio State. Tune in to CBS at noon. It's the versus of. I hate my life.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
It's well played, though, by Michigan. And you know it is.
It's amazing.
It's good. It's good quick bounce back. And I hate to go full on, like, you know, flailing, wacky, inflatable arm tube guy from Family Guy there. I felt like I did with the versus the of. So maybe I'll run that back, just take some of the energy out of it, and we'll do it again one day.
It's just amazing that somebody wants to copyright the. I mean, mind you, it's definitely going to fall flat on its face, and they're going to have to bring it back and say, hey, we want to trademark the Ohio State. They're like, oh, now we get you.
And then you know, that's in the same family, and I could just picture Bill Clinton with that little kind of thumb barely sticking up, the thumbs up.
Yes, what, I know. Yes.
What is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to do that little semi-thumbs up. Nobody else is laughing because they're not in the 237 Roof Studios, but it's the little thumb that barely extends above the fist. That thumbs up right there. What is. The. I want to trademark the. Unbelievably stupid. Hey, something that's not dumb is a trip to our website, 1037thegame.com, for more than just the on-demand audio. Don't forget about the Dynamite blogs. Our good friend RP3, he's got one such blog up right now. He details the Acadiana Christian Athletics Defenders. That's right. It's a homeschooled football team right here in our backyard. They compete in the Louisiana Independent Football Tournament, and you can read a lot more at Raymond's blog. Go to 1037thegame.com. About 35 minutes to go. We'll talk some high school football and more college football on the other side. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling on with a football-heavy edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. I'm Ben. He's Clint. Our pleasure to take you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And, brother, if you enjoy seeing this face, I'm not sure that you do, you better enjoy it while you can. You've got about 32 more minutes of it. Tomorrow, B2BS will be live from Musipatu in New Iberia. Wednesday, Twin Peaks on Johnston, leading everyone into RP3 and Company's Fantasy Draft. Thursday, the Taproom River Ranch, just being basically awesome, as we do every week since September of 2015. And Friday, Rufino's on the River. Make sure you join us while you can. That's kind of a get-it-while-it's-hot type of situation. We're going to be moving those remotes. They won't be on Fridays anymore starting in September because of?
High school football,
you're
brother.
Damn right. Karen Crow, Acadiana, week one. Ooh, I might have to go to the open-air Crow Dome. Might have to do the show from the open-air Crow Dome for the first time. I know I don't have to because we're not far from there, but I might want to.
Exactly, especially if I'm not mistaken, the first is going to be the Acadiana game, correct? Or am I wrong with this?
Are you even listening? I just said Karen Crow Acadiana from the Open Air Crow Dome. Yes!
Okay, I heard Open Air Crow Dome.
I'm not going to the Open Air Crow Dome to... who can I not offend from the area here?
Yeah, it's hard to do.
Who does Karen Crow play that's not from the area here?
It's tough. Like, we're just gonna leave it at that.
I was about to slam somebody. I don't want to go... I'm not going out there for Karen Crow fill in the blank. Just know that your favorite team is probably fill in the blank. And let's just move on from that. Let's get to some Saints updates really quickly. Luke Johnson, now doing a great job. I forgot until we had him on a few weeks ago. New gig with the USA Today. You can read him locally in the Daily Advertiser. Luke reports the following players not at Saints practice today. Ted Ginn Jr., Keith Kirkwood, both at wide receiver. Saquon Hampton, the rookie DB. Marcus Sherrills, That's the name that we were looking for earlier. He'll be handling your return duties, former Minnesota Viking. Alex Anzalone, not technically at practice, but rehabbing outside. Call that practice adjacent. Craig Robertson, Chris Clark, Mario Edwards, and whatever a Genio Grissom is. We're not at Saints practice today. Wanted to make sure we gave you that update. We've been all in today on LSU, the Saints, college football as a whole, the Raging Cajuns. We will get to high school football in about 10 minutes. J.P. Kelly, CEO of the newly formed Louisiana Select Association, will be with us. Where and when will the Select Football State Championships be? That's the main topics of discussion, plus is reconciliation in the cards for the public and private schools. We'll ask those questions and more with J.P. Kelly. But there's one other fairly significant event from the weekend, Clinton. I don't want to just steer around it. Wasn't good news for the home team, but we still got to steer into it. And you were over at Twin Peaks on Johnston hosting a watch party for this event. And unfortunately, local hero, D.C. Daniel Cormier, took one on the chin quite literally from Stipe Miocic. Give us the rundown, your takeaways.
First off, I think Daniel Cormier never wants to go to Anaheim ever again because both of his professional losses in the UFC came in that same arena. So it's safe to say that's a place he wants to stay the hell away from. And I think when you just look at the fight all the way around, he dominated the first three rounds of it. It was just impressive. I felt like everybody at Twin Peaks, especially after the first round when he got a huge takedown, I thought maybe he was going to call it a day after the first round. But you saw Stipe hang in there. DC wound up getting more and more gas. That fourth round, though, we saw Stipe change his strategy. Instead of going for the head, you could tell that DC was definitely focusing way too much on that. He was deviating from his especially his wheelhouse, and that is the wrestling background that he has. I feel like that was one of the biggest things, and he admitted as much after the fight, saying that he deviated from that plan, deviated from what he's been training for his whole career, and that is to be a wrestler, not as a pugilist like he was last night.
What do you think drove him to that decision? Why did he go that route?
Because it was successful. The dude was landing like significant strikes. Again, like when you're able to hit with the consistency that you are and the way he was last night or last Saturday, you're going to keep doing it, right? You're going to wind up just doing what works. It's like when you're watching an LSU game, you're going to see him run the ball down their throats, putting up like 200 yards. You're going to wind up just continue to run the ball, right? You're going to continue doing what's been working for you until you obviously it doesn't work. And we saw Stipe finally make the decision to change what he was doing and land some body blows. And then once he was able to find that opening, hit it was almost like in Mike Tyson's punch out when you're playing against King Hippo, and you just keep hitting him in the stomach enough times, eventually you'd be able to land the knockout punch, and that's what happened on Saturday.
So what's next? I guess that would be my next question. What comes next for Daniel Cormier?
That's the biggest question of them all. It's something that we've been talking about nonstop over the last year. And what's next for him? What happens next? Because he said that all the way back in March, that was going to be his last fight. But, of course, some things happened. Brock Lesnar decided he didn't want to deal with USADA anymore. And then the decision was made to move that fight back to this past Saturday with DC Stipe 2. What happens next? Even DC's not sure right now because he didn't want to admit as much. He felt like maybe it was time, but he wasn't going to say anything because you don't want to have your emotions get the best of you. We're going to wind up finding out probably in a couple months' time that with DC makes a decision either to retire or we get the trilogy between DC and Stipe, because everybody wants to talk about the John Jones trilogy. I feel like that ship has sailed. Now it's DC Stipe 3. Everybody wants to see that.
We're jumping around a bit as we start hour 3, but consider it a bit of a catch-all segment, right? We gave you the latest from Saints training camp today. Just talked a little bit of the UFC event over the weekend. I know you saw this, Clint. I haven't had time to fully digest it, but within the last hour and a half, the Raging Cajuns announced a student supporters organization. What does that mean? Well, let me tell you what it is first. It's an organization, a rewards program. Free to join. You get priority tailgate space, reserved seating, potential rewards and prizes that will be given out throughout this 2019-2020 season. They have some exclusive events where you can do meet and greet with the head coaches. You were recently in that type of situation. This can't be anything but good, but give me some of your take on specifically what you think it means and how it will help.
Well, first off, I'm really jealous that this didn't happen while I was still in school at the time. But really, I think this is just awesome because you think about it, Ben. It's all about trying to build that culture, something we've talked about a lot with UL. I think if you have these meet and greets, you have all this stuff set up, you're trying to build a relationship with the students. You're trying to build things up. We talk about it all the time, how this like $3 beer, $1 hot dog type stuff, that's going to work really well to get people in the door. It's all about keeping those people to stay in the door and come back down the road. I think the students are the first thing that you need to be able to focus in on and make sure these guys, like, even if they wind up graduating and moving on, they can still be a fan of the Cajuns. And whenever they're in town, they're like, hey, let's go catch the Cajuns baseball game. Let's go catch Cajuns basketball or football or whatever. It's about building a lifelong relationship with these students after they're done. I think that's the biggest thing for me, at least from the athletic perspective.
If the number one thing that LSU students want is to be able to sing Neck and for the band to play Neck, what's the number one thing you think the UL students want? Is it where they sit? Is it where they tailgate?
I think where they tailgate, and they're getting that already with the way everything's set up, where I believe, I'd have to look at the graph again, but I believe it's basically where their old setup used to be, and that's the perfect situation for them because, again, I think that was one thing that wound up going the wrong way of the athletic department early on was the fact that they moved it back towards the sororities, the fraternities. It's a little too far away, and like, why are you going to walk all the way over there when you can just keep getting drunk and the party keeps going on over the sororities and the fraternities?
I think you're talking out the side of your neck.
Well, I can't say what I really
just
want to say.
Just put that on a tee, man. Just
yes.
Absolutely crushing balls off of a tee. We've been doing it just about all day long. On the other side of kind of our final break of the program, we've got another World's Shortest Segment audition. Thank you, Astros, hosting the Detroit Terrible Baseball Tigers. But on the other side, we got J.P. Kelly coming up. We'll be talking about the Louisiana Select Association, where and when for your football state championship. So do not go anywhere. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
It's Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in more Bumper to Bumper Sports, always live on 103.7 The Game. You know we love talking high school football here, and, well, there's been a lot of change. We know that. I want to get a little perspective from our next guest. Excited to welcome aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, J.P. Kelly, Athletics Director for Catholic High in Baton Rouge and Louisiana Select Association CEO. Coach Kelly, great to have you. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for having us on. I know you're real busy with the start of college football, and we appreciate you taking some time to talk about some high school sports.
Well, give us a little bit of, your background. We had Mike Boyer from Terlings Catholic on maybe 2 weeks ago, but the formation and, moving forward with Louisiana Select Association, what's it been like?
It's been a great process. In January, they passed the motion that the select schools would host their championship honors in football, boys and girls basketball, softball, and baseball. And then since then, what happened in April, the select school principals, athletic directors, coaches got together for a meeting. And to be honest with you, that wasn't the most organized meeting that was ever held. There was a lot of opinions, a lot of suggestions. But out of that meeting, what needed to occur was, hey, let's get organized. So a group was nominated to when tasked with trying to organize how we host championships and how we, organize playoffs and things like that. So in May, that group got together and put out a message to all the other principals and athletic directors, coaches that said, hey, we believe that this is what needs to happen. First, we need to get a structure, and then we need to figure out a way where football coaches can talk about the football playoffs, where baseball coaches can talk about the baseball playoffs, where basketball coaches can talk about the basketball playoffs. We sent that message out, and then in June, we had another meeting where we had conversations with the LHSAA about, hey, look, this is what we're trying to do. What can you help us with? What can we do? And then we started area meetings where we said, this is the structure of what we think we can do to help the athletics, to help championship venues and to get championship venues and things like that. And So we had these area meetings, and then July 29th, we got all the principals together in Lafayette and had a vote to say, do we want to go forward with this select association and help us get this done? And it was overwhelmingly yes. So in a few short months, what we did was we got 108 schools together to have an organized process. So we're real proud about that.
Pretty incredible in that period of time. And I know a press release was authored and sent out by you on Friday of this past week. What can you tell our listeners about the dates for the LSA football championships and whether or not a venue has been solidified yet?
The dates are going to be December 6th and 7th. That's the week before the championship for the non-select schools. And for right now, the venues have not been determined. We sent out RFPs last week, and we gave people until August 30th to get them back once we receive all those. And they've been very well received, but once we receive all those, we'll try to figure out what's in the best interest of these schools and different prices and opportunities that go along with those venues. And so it should be soon, sometime before the first football game is what I've told people, is we hope to have venues selected by the time that the first regular season football game kicks off.
Our guest is J.P. Kelly, CEO of the Louisiana Select Association. And let's keep going down that road, Coach, because I know that there are so many factors and criteria that will come to play when you select that venue. Give us some of those. And I'm not going to ask you to rank them, but I mean the proximity, knowing that you've got such a heavy saturation of South Louisiana select schools. I mean, what all goes into making that decision?
I think we open it up to them and say, this is the needs that we have. We have great championship games that are going to be played there. What do the dressing rooms look like? What's your seat capacity? Are you available? What's the price? All these different factors that go into it. And Ben, we're not trying to keep any of this quiet. I think that, you know, most people will know that the universities are interested in doing this if they can. And so we sent it out to all the university and colleges around Louisiana. And the responses have been they want to do it, and they're trying to find ways to accommodate us. And they have some factors that they have to consider, and we have to rank them accordingly. So that whole process should be concluded by the first football game. And what's important is that it's a memorable occasion for the guys who are competing in the state championship in football or basketball or softball or whatever it is, baseball. And it has to be of a high quality. So that's really what we're looking for. Give these guys a good memory of what it means to compete in a state championship here in Louisiana.
I think so many people think about what used to go down. I mean, a couple feet from me, the Cajun Dome. They had the championships for basketball there, and they were so well received. But it wasn't just the Cajun Dome at the end of it, Coach, and you probably know this. The Conventions Bureau here locally, there were some things with, I guess, where people were staying, the restaurants that, hey, the numbers just didn't work out. So you say that you're getting all these requests out to the universities. How did they, in turn, then deal hand-in-hand with, I guess, some of these CVBs?
That's a great opportunity for us, the university, and those business, you know, those local business places to try and figure something out. And we haven't got to that process yet, because let's say, for example, a school in Lafayette wants it. Let's say UL wants it. Well, at that point, then we have to go to those different business associations and say, hey, look, we're getting this many people that should be coming into this city. How are we going to accommodate them? What are things where are places they can go to eat? What's a good place before the game? What's a good place after the game? Things like that. But it is a great business opportunity. So what we just need to do is make sure that the times of the games are really conducive for people to get there, and that you know, once your team gets to a championship and it's relatively close to where your school is, I think that they'll overwhelmingly support it. But we got to have it at a time that you know, people can get off work and get there and things like that.
Really is a fascinating process, and the speed at which everybody's getting it done, pretty impressive to me. Appreciate the insight there. We'll move forward now. J.P. Kelly, our guest on 103.7 The Game. What would you like to see the end result be? Not just of this process with the LSA, but moving forward, what would you like to see from everything that's happened so far, and maybe more importantly, where we're going?
Without a doubt. What I would like to see, and what overwhelmingly the select schools would like to see, is the LHSAA to get back together. If I can do anything, and I've reached out to many people, the LHSAA, and said, what is the best way that the LSA can help us get back together? And so if that means us, you know, making accommodations for different sports and you know, a multiplier, just having conversations about in January, what's a proposal look like that most people can support so that we don't have nine championships in football, so that we don't have all these different teams making playoffs with records that really don't support it, and just get it back to a real quality competition for these young people. I've said this many times. Right now, the students who are participating in high school sports, they want the association back together. Overwhelmingly, Eric Held, who is in charge of the Coaches Association for the LHSAA, he has said many times that overwhelmingly in his just conversations with coaches, they want it to get back together. And in the ADs, same thing. So what we need to do is just have a really unified front with the LHSAA to put something out there that says, this is the way we can do it. Let's vote on it in January. Let's get these championships back together. Let's get all schools playing each other. Without a doubt, that would be my end goal for this whole process.
Coach, as I've mentioned in this interview, you wear a number of hats, one of them the athletic director at Catholic High in Baton Rouge, and the Bears are making another trip across the basin this fall. So let's have a little bit of fun and preview another great matchup with the STM Cougars.
Man, St. Thomas More just has an unbelievable program over there. It's so fun going over to that environment. It's one of the best environments in high school athletics. The support that they get from their parents and from the community is fantastic. The giant scoreboard that they have out there with the replays and the action that they can have on there. It's a fabulous place to play football. We're looking forward to coming over there to play y'all. I think that's a Week 5 game. Two great teams going at it, too. Two runner-up distinctions going at it, Week 5.
I'm looking forward to it. And I'll say this for our listeners' benefit. I can't help but call you Coach, man. I showed up at Catholic in Baton Rouge in, I think, 99, and not only had English class with you, but you were out there on the football field coaching up the O-line. So you got to forgive me, but it's 20 years later. I got to call you Coach.
Well, Ben, I apologize for that English class. If I ever led you wrong on your subject-verb agreement and things like that, I'm real proud of you and what you've done. And the fact that you love athletics and are this passionate about it, hopefully I had a little something to do with it. But forgive me for those grammar mistakes that you may have made in college.
You give it, then you take it away. But, you know, I appreciate the time. And I look forward to following how this thing goes. I know you've got about a week and a half until maybe the next announcement. So Godspeed on that. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Ben, thanks a lot again for all you do for high school sports. And if you need anything, just give me a call. Thank you.
Great guest and great to have him on. Yeah, that's the guy who taught me to talk like this. So you know where to direct all of your complaints and maybe even a little bit of praise if we find that in some corner of Acadiana. I will say this. I know we're heading up on our final break of the program and then another World Shortest Segment audition. Sadly, I feel like I have to say this. I am only getting response so far about coming back together from the select side. I would love to hear more from the non-select side. It's a group that I know is larger in number, and much of the feedback from that side of the aisle so far has been kind of feet dug in a little. You know, we're good where we are. I wonder if there are people on the non-select side who will come out publicly and say, yeah, we want this to come back together as well. Because understanding, as J.P. Kelly just said, they're going to have to be concessions. Yeah, the select side's going to have to give in here to make this thing come back together. But I wonder if there's receptivity on the other side. Let me say that another way and then we'll hit the break. I know there's receptivity on the other side, but nobody seems to want to say it publicly. Just putting that out there. We'll be right back in. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.